You're listening to the Ape for Comics podcast, sponsored by StashMyComics.com and our local comic book shop in Roanoke, Virginia, BNDComics.com. And now, here's your hosts, Matt Barrett and Neil Rickman.
You're listening to the Ape for Comics podcast, episode 4. I'm your host, Matt Barrett, and with me, as usual, is...
Neil Rickman.
Why do I always repeat your name?
Just you're giving me that nice echo.
Well, as I said, we're on episode 4, and this is actually take 2 for us because we sort of lost the last episode. The file got corrupted, but fear not, we are actually better prepared than we were last time. Better prepared to give you a better show. I'm gonna say better again. Better.
I think it's all out of the vortex's fault, and you'll learn about that in a moment.
Yes, we're going to do what we always do every week. Obviously, we like to read comics, and every week, Neil and I trade books. This week, I gave him Out of the Vortex, a little ditty from the 1990s, and he let me borrow... What did I borrow?
Avenging Spider-Man number 5.
Avenging Spider-Man number 5. I thought it was 6. Okay, it's 5. The one with Captain America in it. And so we read these books, and now we're here to talk about them on the show. And for the special feature today, we will be talking about horror comics. Now, I think we said in the last show that we were going to do our favorite horror comic, but we've decided to expand our horizons a little bit and just talk a little bit about horror comics in general. I know you're reading some things that span more than an issue.
Yeah, I was trying to keep, because there, I had a feeling that I would go very Walking Dead on it, because it's just the obvious. Mm-hmm. So, but honestly, it's not my favorite horror comic, so I'm not lying per se.
Right.
And just everything, especially with this this week in particular, is the week that it's coming back on the air. So,
okay.
Yeah, it's in everybody's minds. But there's some really good horror books out there aside from that that get overlooked quite a bit.
Yeah. Agreed. All right. So we're going to go right into the reviews. Comic Swap.
Comic Swap.
And first we're going to do, let's go ahead and do Out of the Vortex.
Yes. Out of the Vortex number 1.
A little ditty from Dark Horse Comics. Script by John Ostrander. Pencils by Damon Willis. Inks by Joe Rubinstein. Letters by Louis Buchalis. Colors by James Sinclair. Matthew Hollingsworth. Cover by Doug Mank. I think I'm saying that correctly. Edits by Jenny Bricker.
Yeah, it's a hard name. The yeah. Doug Mahank. There's like an H in there.
Yeah, so. There's an H, probably a silent H in there.
Oh, you know.
So anyways, Neil, why don't you go ahead and start off. You had some interesting views on this. I liked sort of your breakdown of what this book is.
Okay, everybody. We're going to the desert, a top secret base in the desert. A scientist disappears from this top secret base, then comes back out of the vortex... With a, what color mohawk is that? Is that like a, what do we got a, no, there's no mohawk. He reminds me very much of Gladiator.
Mm-hmm.
You remember him from the,
he
is, I would call him the most 90s amalgamed character I've ever seen, but he's in a book with a style that's very much not that at all.
Yeah, very Silver Age.
Right. So he comes back out of the vortex pretty 90s'd out. He's very omnipotent. He picks a lot of odd words to say to people, to say the least. But the book overall is just, it's insane. It pretty much goes from a military classic EC style Dark Horse feeling book, which it is from Dark Horse, but I mean it, and then it goes into what I would call kind of a circus of 90s color and explosion.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually I read this again before the show, and he's actually an alien scientist who originally created this vortex, and then from what I gather the military discovered it some years later, built their walls around it, didn't know what it was, and then these guys come back to attack, to find the scientist, and then he pulls himself out of the vortex. So you've got this mixture of the military trying to figure out just exactly what they have, and these alien entities battling, and they could really care less about the humans that are beneath them. And he has a very, the vortex guy, I don't know what else to call him. He's very much like Dr. Doom in that he thinks humans are very much beneath him. He doesn't have time to waste with humans. He's got his own things going on. But these group of aliens that are after him really hate this guy. And we sort of get a little bit of backstory, but they have definitely have some sort of history. And they want this guy dead. And he's not going down without a fight.
I'm gonna say this. It's interesting you picked that out. I think of the plot, I got kind of lost at to where this guy started out.
Mm-hmm.
So... I seriously thought he was a guy that went in and came back out.
It kind of requires a second and third read to really figure it out.
It's just so much goes on in this one issue. And I'll say that it's a $2 book. And granted, it was, I think I've got the date here of 93.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a very long read for a 93 book. Because if you remember, books were kind of just like, oh, look, pictures. We got some dialogues. But everything was about the art around that age.
Right.
There wasn't too much in-depth in story unless you found the real odd cat out.
Exactly.
So, yeah, I mean, he ends up going, just kind of comes out of this vortex with, like you said, the brothers that remind me very much of, the brothers in G.I. Joe, Tomax and Zamot.
Right.
They come out shooting him, and they had some weird ponytails going on or something, didn't they?
Some kind of thing off the top of their head. It almost looks like some sort of a knight's feather, but it's obviously their hair. And their faces are kind of skeletal looking to a certain degree. Emaciated would be the word.
That being said, while it's very interesting characters, I mean, I have never seen characters look like this. Even in the 90s, I don't recall things being quite that outlandish.
Mm-hmm.
The colors in this book are fantastic.
Oh, lots of greens and purples and yellows.
And it's
lots of purple.
It's weird because if you look at the beginning, it's pretty, and there's parts where it's pretty drab, but the colors where everything's going wild
mm-hmm.
are very vibrant. And the guy, one of the guys doing the colors, Matt Hollinsworth, he mm-hmm. does a lot of good work for Marvel these days.
Okay.
And he's done work in The Punisher. He's done work on Thor. And I actually wrote the guy, and he's really nice. But he's probably my favorite colorist in the industry right now.
Okay. And the script, John Ostrander is no,
he's no stranger.
Exactly. No stranger to comics. He's done stuff from really long list of just about every company that you can imagine.
Star Wars Legacy, for right. one. And I believe he did some work on Secret Six. I could be wrong on that. I think we mentioned that. I know I've seen his name pop up here and there in DC, at least.
I want to say it was like four issues or something in combination with Gale. So, yeah, he has done a lot of things. So, like you said, no stranger to writing, and he writes very well. And this is the type of story that I wanted to continue on with because there's a great relationship between the alien vortex guy and this female officer of the army. And he kind of... She's very much...
she's sassy.
Yes, she's a sassy broad. No offense. I don't like to use that
word.
She's
sassy, and she's in the military. She comes off very masculine, so it's kind of the broad
getting
from that. So, yeah.
Yeah. And it seems very much like a tale out of the 60s where you wouldn't expect that from a woman. Nowadays, you expect that. That's why this book almost seems a little dated. They kind of belittle her and act like she doesn't know what she's doing because she's a woman. But it's obvious in this book that she's the smartest person of the whole bunch. Because while they're off all getting killed, she's trying to figure this thing out.
Oh, yeah, she's a strong character, and she ends up... I thought he fried her brain in one scene.
No.
He picks her as, like, his emissary, and in some kind of dystopian way, shoots the information he wants her to have into her head.
Right.
And it looks like Superman's heat ray vision, or hitting her right in her pupils.
He's very businesslike. There's within the midst of this, there's a hilarious congressman who's very weaselly, Congressman DeMarco, and he's a big jerk.
Oh, he's a great trope, isn't he?
Yeah. He's a coward. He goes running, but he wants to be the ambassador, the go-between from this alien to the normal people. And the alien picks right up on it. He's like, I know what you're trying to do. If I choose you as my go-between, you're going to be the most powerful man in your world. I'd rather have this lady here who has shown me some good qualities And so he snubs him. And then basically, the best, my favorite part is his dome continues to grow, his vortex. And he basically at the end is just like, all right, y'all need to go away now. I got to do some stuff. If you need me, contact my secretary here. And you might want to prepare because some aliens are coming to attack us and I got to figure out how to beat them.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it.
You know, and I'm just gonna take this part of the desert with me. And it's mine now. It's very Doctor Doom in that, like, I'll create a country and it's mine. Or I'll just take this over. It's mine now.
Yep. You're all beneath me.
There's no UN. What is this? Get out of here.
So this book only lasted 12 issues, but it's 12 issues I want to find at some point. This is the type of
book. The preview
for
the second one has a cover by none other than Mike Mignola of Hellboy fame. Hmm. So I thought that was pretty interesting. Yeah. You know, that was him back in the day and before he really got, you know, too big with Hellboy. And then as far as a rating goes on this book, there's a lot of confliction going on with me because I've got to give folks what I will give the very serious, no-nonsense reader this, and I don't think they'd like it very much. I'm not going to rate it for them. I'm going to give it my rating.
Right.
My rating, I give it an 8. And that sounds out, you know, from everything I've described, you're probably like, what, an 8? Well, here's the thing. I love cheesy movies. Love them. I'm a huge Mystery Science Theater fan. And if you don't know what that is, just know that I'm a cheesy movie fan. And it struck that chord with me. It was like, it was akin to sitting down and watching an Ed Wood movie, like Plan 9 from Outer Space. Just any nice 80s, you know, Big Trouble in Little China. Right. I mean, it's very akin to that if you think about it. I mean, in that movie, you go from a truck driver driving around with ninja stuff happening to underground and all these monsters. This feels very much that. You go from the military in the desert, it's very drab, to, holy cow, there's these colors coming out of a vortex. These like, magenta-haired twins and, like, a guy who looks like, I mean, who would you say he was a combination of?
Gosh, I don't know.
He's got like, the Colossus metal, yeah. Metal stripey
red
going
metal
on.
Striping, and then he's got a strange cape-like attachment that goes to his chest and his back, but it's more like a gigantic triangle.
It's very
him.
Mr. Sinister.
Yes.
With the, yeah.
And an eyeball on his chest. You should definitely look it up. It's interesting.
Anybody with an eyeball on their chest, I love. Oh, yeah. Instantly. It's amazing.
Yeah, that's kind of my score, too. And because a lot of comics from the 90s, you'll go back, and they don't necessarily stand the test of time. You're like, well, I enjoyed that in the 90s. It's okay. But the art in this is solid, and the story is solid. It's very much like a Silver Age comic, and a lot of those comics, to me, are still very relevant today in terms of their density and the good stories told. So, yeah, fun read. All right, so that does it for our first review. We'll move on now to our second review, in which I read Avenging Spider-Man number 5, courtesy of Neil's collection.
That's right, and that's got writer Zeb Wells, art Lanil Yu, of I think Secret Invasion fame, colors by Sonny Go, GHO. It's a Marvel title for $3.99, which most things, unfortunately, are moving towards that, but that's life. Such is the way of life.
But you get a free digital download with that.
Yeah, you know. I'd rather have like a free slice of pizza.
Yes.
Okay.
Let's get on this, Marvel. Free pizza with every $3.99 book.
We're talking like this isn't a good book. We're going right past pizza. Yeah, but no.
No, it's a good book.
Avenging Spider-Man has been a great run, period. What did you think of number 5?
I enjoyed it, much like number 12, I think, was the one I picked up with Deadpool. And when I got that, I thought, well, this Avenging Spider-Man is actually pretty good. It wasn't what I thought it was, which originally I thought was a book about two characters literally avenging Spider-Man. I thought it had to do with the Ultimate Universe.
You thought since he died in the Ultimate Universe, there were people avenging him.
Yes. Even though it didn't have Ultimate attached to the title, which should have been my first clue.
It sounded like a TLC Spider-Man show, like being something or avenging...
Being Spider-Man.
Avenging Warwick Davis. Yeah.
So this book is Spider-Man and Captain America, basically, for lack of a better description. As those of you who don't read this book should know that Avenging Spider-Man is basically Spider-Man and another character or two, and focuses on his relationship with said character. And this particular one is really cool, particularly for geeks and nerds alike, because Spider-Man is trying to bring out the geek in Captain America. Now, how does he do this?
He does it beautifully by... They figure out... They find some old drawings, I guess, and they find out, hey, you know, Steve Rogers used to be kind of in the comics. They find like an old comic he was doing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it was very much... He was doing a comic on pretty much him.
Right,
in a
way.
Before he became Captain America. So I thought it was pretty crazy, you know. And Captain America is not... He's not so proud of this. He's kind of hiding who he was. You know, he doesn't like remembering, hey, I was a weak, you know, pushed around guy. So much as Spider-Man, who is the everyman. He embraces everything he was to this day. You know, even though he's got these crazy powers, he swings around, he's got super strength, he's got these senses. Peter Parker is still being Peter Parker. He might pull back a little bit, not to give it away in the outfit, but it's not the same with Captain America. Captain America tries to be what he thinks America needs, which is, that's the character, that's Captain America. Spider-Man pretty much saves the day the best way he can as him.
Right. Yeah, some people have something like that happen to them, and they completely change to become a completely different person. But people like Spider-Man, he changed, but he's still kind of the same nerdy Spider-Man, you know, Peter Parker that he was before. Captain America kind of wanders around the whole issue, trying to skirt the issue, and Spider-Man keeps pestering him with it. And there's some awkward moments here that are kind of classic. But eventually, we're not going to give everything away, but we do get to see a sort of softer side of Captain America. So if you think he's kind of a cold character and you've never really been into him, and that was kind of my impression of him, I haven't read a lot of Captain America, this type of issue will possibly endear you to him a little bit more, maybe knowing that underneath that hard exterior, there's a little nerd inside.
Yeah, I thought it was a stellar issue. I'm a Captain America fan before and after this, but of course, I really like the side of this. It kind of demonstrated, and the chemistry between him and Spider-Man there. This series has done a phenomenal job with that, and I think I've got an idea of why I'm so into it. My first experience, I don't know about you, with Spider-Man was Spider-Man and His Amazing Friends.
Yeah, that was probably mine as well.
And I'm thinking, well, wow, you know, Bobby Drake and Firestar. You know, you get the, well, Bobby Drake, Iceman.
Right.
And so... he works well with, you know, even though he normally not put in a team per se, you know, now he's on the Avengers or whatnot, but back in the day he was like, I don't do teams. The X-Men invite him. He's like, I'm not really in the teams. He teamed up a lot for not being a team player. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
It was all about the banter, cause he was really good with the one-liners, and he works well with another hero.
Yeah. So. I prefer Spider-Man with somebody, to be honest with you. When he's on his own, it can grind on my nerves a little bit. The overdone inner monologue at times can get a little tiresome. But when he's got somebody, particularly a serious character to bounce off of, it really makes for a great dynamic. I mean, him and Punisher has always been one of my favorite interactions.
You know, and I'm reluctant to say this because I really want them to bring Heroes for Hire back and Matt Fraction and Brett and Brubaker to get together again and do that.
Right.
Since Immortal Iron Fist, when they were behind it, was so good. And they used Luke Cage. I could see somebody bringing back Spider-Man and someone else, even though Spider-Man would never be somebody that do it for money, per se. So exactly. I guess it wouldn't be so much, you know, I don't know what I'm saying. This title pretty much is Heroes for Hire, mm-hmm. except Spider-Man's the only mainstay, and then it's a rotating other.
Right.
So that's how I see it. It's he's not doing it for money, but it's like, you know, kind of a buddy team up each time, and you know, there you have it.
Yeah, and in regards to the Deadpool issue, just to touch on that for a second, I was a little worried it would be too much, you know, because they're both such wisecrackers, but they basically sort of toned down Spider-Man just enough to make...
I don't know if they toned him down or if it's just the fact that Wade is insane. There's
he's
okay,
that much more crazy.
There's snappy one-liner, and then there's crazy one-liner.
Right.
I mean, So he just looks maybe a little tamer, and you know, when put next to Deadpool, I mean, it's
that could be.
And anybody that watches him just kind of, I mean, you know, let me step back.
Now, do you know, is this going to continue to be a title with the Marvel Now stuff?
As far as I know, to be honest, I haven't checked previews out in a while, so I haven't heard anything one way or the other. I'll be reading it until they drop it at the rate of how good it is. If they keep it this good, I mean, I'm on. Okay. It hasn't dipped for me. I know some people have maybe had ups and downs with it, but for me, it has been a very solid title. I wish it would go to at least 100 issues.
That would be nice nowadays.
Yeah.
A rare event. Well, ratings-wise, I would give this like an 8.5, maybe even a 9. I mean, it was just the art. There was nothing to complain about with the art. I mean, it was super solid. And my only thing with the story would be that I kind of wish this was a 2 or 3 issue thing. I wanted to see more interaction between him and Cap as they sort of break down these barriers. But
yeah, and I'll say that with how it's been going, it's been a little bit like that. There's been some characters that didn't stay long enough, and then there's some there was a Miss Marvel recent run, and I didn't know that it needed to be as much. You could tell there were kind of boosts in that new series hitting when it happened. Not that it was bad, because I heard that was really good too, but you know, they did kind of promote through that book.
Mm-hmm. You know, now that you mentioned Miss Marvel, I know you haven't picked up Avengers vs. X-Men number 12, but I will mention, look in there for Miss Marvel. Her costume is not the new costume. And I was wondering if that was like a mistake, or have we gone back in time? I don't know.
You could ask him, but I'm telling you, they're gonna weave a wicked tale of how that's supposed to be that
exactly,
way.
Exactly, yeah.
And that's continuity. No. That happened the day before yesterday, tomorrow. You remember?
Yeah, yeah.
And then you'll be like, huh? And they'll be like, thanks for asking. Bye.
I'm not the type of person that gets all up in arms about that stuff, but I was just like, I thought we were going with this new uniform. Okay, it doesn't matter.
Yeah, you know.
Oh, well.
It's a crossover event. It's never happened.
All right. Well, that's our two reviews. We hope you enjoy them. We don't even really know what we're reviewing next week, so that's just going to have to be a surprise.
I'm excited.
Yeah, because I have no idea. Maybe by the end of this show, we'll have some idea.
As much as this might horrify some people, I think I'll just shove a bunch of comics in a bag and like pick up.
Close your eyes and pick one.
Well, it's a little bit crumpled, but here you go.
Let's do that then. Let's do a grab bag. And next week, bring in about 4 or 5. And I'll do the same. And I mean, not on the show, obviously, when we get back to
work. I'm going
to
put a really bad one there. I hope you don't get it.
When we get to work early in the week, before this podcast even comes out, we'll get the bag together, reach in, pixel mount. Sound good?
Okay.
All right. Grab bag next week.
It sounds fantastic, Matt.
It is fantastic. All right, we'll move on to the special feature, which is horror comics.
1, 2, 3. StashMyComics.com is the leading free online interactive comic book database. Catalog your comics and track prices, character, and creator appearances. Follow the daily blog reviews, editorials, and a weekly podcast. Connect with other fans through member reviews and discussion forums. Keep abreast of site updates on Twitter at StashMyComics and find us on Facebook. StashMyComics.com, powered by Geek Energy.
Nailed it.
All right, so horror comics. You read them.
I do.
You like them, don't you?
It's some of my very favorites at this time.
Now, let's specify what type of horror comics you're talking about here. Are you talking about, like, old-timey, like, Frankensteins and Draculas and zombies, or your true, you know, gory type of horror comics?
I'd say almost an amalgamation.
Okay.
Because a lot of what I read in Dark Horse, and why I'm becoming such a Dark Horse fanboy, is because of the Manolaverse, as I'll call it.
Right.
I mean, between BPRD, Hellboy, and Baltimore, Lord Baltimore to be specific, they call him Lord Baltimore. He's very, very good titles. Mm-hmm. the imagery in some of those really haunts you. There's another book called The Witchfinder that he does, which is a Victorian detective type story that has been very, very good. Every time they bring out a series of it, they do many series with it in spurts. They'll have a mini here, a mini there with it. But I want to talk a little bit about Lord Baltimore, because his story is, in particular, if you think, it's very horrific. He's fighting in what I believe is the First World War, and he and his men pretty much get annihilated going across this enemy line. But he wakes up, his legs been shot all the heck, you know, to a large vampire bat eating on it, gnawing on it, eating the dead bodies of his men who are now slain. And it goes into, the imagery is just fantastic, phenomenal. It started off as a novel that Mike Mignola did with, I forget the other co-writer, but something Golden. Can't think of his first name right off. But do a great job with the imagery. And the comic books that have accompanied this novel are chilling. I mean, to where I read Walking Dead, and it could be kind of spooky, but the most thing, you're just kind of shock factor, like, oh my gosh, this happened.
Right.
This is truly scary stuff to be looking and reading at. I mean, it's just...
Sticks with you.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So this is Lord Baltimore, which is basically Mike Jr.
I think they just call it Baltimore, but he was a lord of, like, I don't know where.
Right off. But this is just Mike Mignola writing this particular title.
He has written on it. I don't know if he's given over to his buddy that sometimes writes on it, John R. Cootie.
Okay.
I think how you say his name. But there's also another gentleman that was in the original writing of the novel with the last name of Golden. And I can't think of the first name. It might be Brian. But they both started this up. And I recommend it to anyone that's really, like, tired of just either, you know, slasher horror or just, you know, shock value. If you want something that's truly going to make you think about, okay, I'm sitting next to a dark window.
Right.
That it's the title for you.
Yeah, there's a certain art to creating what I consider to be really worthwhile horror. I mean, there's a place for those sort of slasher things, but some of them are just there just for the pure shock of, oh, this guy's head fell off and these guts are coming out. But to really make you frightened and to really disturb you, it takes so much more than that. It takes a very careful build. It takes the right characters. And I read a bunch of some of the older Vampirella books, and I felt like they did a pretty good job of creating just sort of these disturbing, twisted worlds. And it didn't even require a whole lot of disturbing art or anything like that. If you're crafting the right story, you don't have to have the art. I mean, the art pushes it over the edge for sure, but
I would say the art in this was fantastic. I think Mignola handpicks most of his artists anyway. In the vein of that, the best Hellboy story I've ever read, and it takes place in the mountains surrounding, I think it's like the Appalachian Mountains this takes place in. So it's not your average European or, you know, out of the United States story, which more and more BPRD is getting there with the United States. We've had stories here and there, but it's like backwoods U.S. story. And he does it with Richard Corbin, who's the artist, who's doing Ragemore. I think he's writing and drawing that, maybe, that I really want to check. That man draws some disturbing imagery. Hellboy, the Crooked Man.
Correct me if I'm wrong. Is Ragemore not the one where the castle is, like, alive?
Yes.
Okay. I wanted to read that too. So,
Corbin's art is disturbing, to say the least.
Mm-hmm.
And I really loved how he drew Hellboy, and I loved all the messed up things in that book. He has a talent for it.
Okay. Well, you mentioned also something that I have actually read some time ago, but you've been into the Pinocchio Vampire Slayer.
Oh, yes. Yes.
And this is another good black and white, mind you, from SLG. Is that the correct?
Slave Labor Graphics, the same people that bring you Johnny the Homicidal Maniac and Squee and all of that.
Right.
And it's by Dusty Higgins, and I'm drawing a blank on the other guy. Hold on 1 minute. And I'll pull out my books.
Yeah, this was a title that I just picked up. My library had it of all places. And it's not in your typical size comic book. It's in a smaller booklet form. But it is what it says it is. It's Pinocchio hunting vampires. And he kills them with his wooden nose, of all things. So
yeah, he tells a lie and he just sticks a vampire. Tells a lie. It's like Papa Giorgio.
Right.
Put in a quarter to get a car. You know, it's really wild. And it's Van Jensen and Dusty Higgins. And there's three of these so far. You don't have to really get... I mean, I would say, yeah, you would probably want to get the second one after reading the first one, but... I mean, for me, it was a satisfying read at 10.95 on the first one.
Mm-hmm.
And Mark Waid, of all people, says, it's funny, it's scary, it's suspenseful, it's romantic. It's the greatest thing I've read all year. And you notice my nose didn't grow one bit when I said it. Taha. So
nice.
I met these guys in Baltimore before I'd even heard about the book.
Hmm.
And what drew my attention was there was this huge carving of Pinocchio with his nose as a stake holding it up, that one of the creators here, I believe it's Van Jensen, his uncle apparently carved it for him. And I was blown away. I've got pictures on my phone. If I can ever get them off, I'll post it, but there's a weird cord I need for that or whatever.
We might could even find it online somewhere.
Perhaps.
Yeah, we'll have to dig that up. Well, moving on, horror book-wise, another book that we talked about more in the mainstream that more people might be familiar with would be The Swamp Thing. Scott Snyder and Yannick Paquette. Is that how you say it? I believe it's Canadian or French. French-Canadian?
We've talked about me and my pronunciations on this show.
Yes, I don't think any of us really can pronounce the names properly. So if you are that creator and you're by chance listening, apologies.
I am totally sorry, and it's all about the gap in my teeth that I got in Kentucky.
But Swamp Thing has been a phenomenal book. I've mentioned how I'm kind of rot-worlded out, but if I go back and look at, you know, the first 12 issues, it's still a stellar read, and the art is incredible, and there's some truly disturbing imagery in there, particularly with the little boy in the hospital. Abigail's brother, yeah.
And holy cow, yeah, that is the kind of imagery I'm talking about, and a true, it will never leave my mind since. Yeah.
All these bizarre creatures, like, with odd-looking teeth and funny-shaped heads and limbs in places where there's not supposed to be limbs, and I don't know where they come up with this stuff, but it's disturbing.
It is very disturbing. These kids in art school were probably the ones that sat by themselves, or you know, there was a space cleared for that guy
because
something was clearly going on. So,
yeah, most of the stuff Scott Snyder does, though, it has an element of horror to it. If you read his Detective Comics run before he sort of became a little better known, and obviously his Swamp Thing stuff, and then right into the Court of Owls, and now we're dipping into some dangerous territory with the Joker here.
Think about if he ever jumps the fence
and
goes to Marvel. How much awesome he could do, because Marvel's horror needs that.
Yeah,
they've tried. I would love to see him on Ghost Rider.
Oh yeah,
and I would love to see him on Werewolf by Night.
Mm-hmm.
He would be phenomenal.
Yeah,
if they wanted to revamp them and be serious about it, not just let's renew the copyright.
Right.
Let's retain the rights. I would love to see him come across the fence just to do that.
Now, you're still on board with the rot world. Are you reading Animal Man and Frankenstein, which cross over with this event?
Reading Animal Man, which I honestly love a little bit more than Swamp Thing, which is weird because I've been such a huge Swamp Thing fan in the past. But Lemire's just doing that good a job on Animal Man. And then... as far as Frankenstein, it's one of those where I'm most definitely looking at trades, but I know that doesn't help, but it makes me feel bad. It makes me feel like I should be buying issue for issue so
yeah.
I can keep going.
That's one of those titles that I really wanted to get on board with. And I picked up the first issue, and something about the art just initially drew me away, but I've looked at subsequent issues and the art has gotten a lot better. I thought initially the pencils were great, but the inks were a little cloudy for me, and it disturbed me just enough to not, you know, have it make my pull list. But I have a short pull list anyways. But I'm like you now. I'm looking at the series as a whole. I'm like, this looks really fun. I should pick this up at some point.
That, and you spoke to me about Justice League Dark. I don't know if that gets too horrific or what, but that's another title that since Lemire jumped on it, I would really like to check out at some point.
Yeah, I thought Peter Milligan was doing a great job on it, and then I know a lot of people got more excited when Jeff Lemire was on it, but I feel like they've been pretty comparable. And my only recent problem with that book that's made me sort of fade away from it has been it's too much John Constantine for me. I like him, but I really wanted to see more Zatanna, and I wanted to see more Deadman, and it seems like slowly the book has just been his book, you know.
I'm just waiting for Blue Devil. Yeah, that'll happen. Where's Blue Devil? I was a Shadow Pact fan back in the day, so it's a weird cast.
Yeah.
Detective Chimp. That's all I'm saying. You put a chimp in a Sherlock Holmes outfit, I'm sold. I'm there every time.
Neil's there. Other books. I mentioned iZombie, and this is one you said a friend of yours liked, but it's not so much creepy horror.
I liked it initially. It's
more pop, like pop art, particularly with Michael Allred drawing it. But it's not creep you out, like never get these visions out of my head horror. It's just fun horror, what I like to consider fun horror. It's got zombies, it's got vampires, it's got werewolves, it's got the whole gamut of classic horror characters.
I think you're talking about a were-terrier.
You're right, it is a were-terrier.
I do remember because that was one of my favorite parts of the book when I was on for it. So,
and don't forget the were-terrier's dad is a chimpanzee.
Yes,
and that's great.
It's outlandish.
Sadly, that book is over, but I think it had kind of run its course. If you read the whole run, you'll kind of see what I'm talking about. But this book initially started off really strong for me. It came as a $1 issue, which I'm always a sucker for, and this was, for a while, a couple of years ago, my favorite book. Like, this was the one that made the top of my stack for quite a while. And then I just got interested in other things.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So you liked it that strongly. That's awesome. I don't know what it was that it didn't grab me that way, but it's interesting to hear you say you felt, you know, that strong about it.
I think it was just different for me, and I didn't have a lot of experience with indies. So this was kind of like my indie book that I latched onto. I mean, Vertigo, as much as they can be indie. But I liked that the art was different. I liked that it was a horror book, but it was very light. And I liked that there's a ghost and a zombie and vampires and fun things.
I will
say
I liked that. I did like that it had a lot of the horror creatures. Didn't just have one that it focused on, like a zombie. This is a zombie book. This is a vampire. It had a lot of all that going on. It was a very all-around supernatural book.
Some people don't like Michael Arad's art. I think it's definitely very understated, but I like the fact that it's very clear and easy on the eyes. It's not sketchy at all. Everything is crisp and like in your face. And I'm really excited to see what he does with FF, particularly with Mark Waid writing it, which I believe he still is.
Yeah. Well, wait, on FF?
Yeah.
Yeah, Matt Fraction's coming in, I think, with all of it.
I'm sorry, Mike. Well, who did I say?
It's the M's.
What did I say?
You said Mark Waid.
Oh, I meant Matt.
Because everybody wants him writing everything at this point, I believe. They're like, he brought Daredevil back? Like, whoa, he can write anything.
Which is weird, because they've got Fraction doing FF and Fantastic Four, but with two completely different artists.
It's going to make me pick up FF, to be honest, because between Allred's art and then Matt Fraction, I'm interested to see what he does with the Future Foundation. I wanted to drop a couple hits here, not to be left out. As I said, horror is becoming more and more one of my very favorites on my pull list. Proof is about a Sasquatch FBI-type agent, and it has all these cryptids in it. That's had some really good horrific moments. Very creepy things here and there. That, and also, not to be left out, The Goon by Eric Powell. Okay. And I think a lot of people know about that. I'm just going to... Don't forget The Goon. And there's... Going to mention this? Can I throw out that they're doing a Kickstarter?
Yeah, by all means, do the Kickstarter.
They're looking for support donations on Kickstarter.com, is it, for The Goon?
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to get that movie made, but they need donations They need some money thrown that way. So I'm putting it out to everybody. If you tell two friends and I tell two friends, you know how it goes.
Right.
They can get this made because it looks phenomenal what they've already got, but they're hitting some problems with anybody picking a studio picking them up, oddly enough. And
yeah, and if you go, if you YouTube it, you can actually see sort of the sample that they put it. They actually have like a 3 or 4 minute clip with the goon and the rest of the characters, computer animation. And it's very well done.
Yeah, I mean, I've been chomping at the bit for that one for a while, so.
Yeah, when I saw that film, it made me think that it was already sort of in the works, but then you showed me the Kickstarter thing, and I thought, oh, I guess they haven't gotten the backing that they quite wanted yet. We need to look, stashmycomics.com, where you're probably listening to this podcast, has a bunch of, has a section on Kickstarter projects, and I will get with them and see if we can't get that up there. And if not, we'll put the Kickstarter link directly in the post with this episode 4, and you can click on that and donate.
Awesome. I'm excited.
Oh, like, yeah.
I could just rewatch the clip if it doesn't happen just over and over and be fine. But, yeah. I'd really like to see the rest of it.
Or even like an animated series.
Oh, however much money they get, I'm telling them they better make something out of it. If I just get like a 30-minute episode, something has to happen here.
Yeah, Goon's one of those comics that, for whatever reason, I mean, it's so good, but it really, I mean, your hardcore comic book fans know it, but even people who are pretty heavy into Marvel and DC and like Image might not know about this book.
Goon is very much what it you look at it and you think, well, this is about a henchman, right? This isn't about, this is, you look at him, he looks like just a henchman for like a powerful villain, or not even a powerful villain, just some like gangster villain even.
Right.
But the depth this book gets into, it's very slapstick. It's very, with its horror. I mean, there's, I don't even know how to describe this book. It's so, I don't know. Have you read it, Matt, at all?
I've read about 5 of the trades. It's been a while because I don't own them. I borrowed them.
It's very funny with the way violence is done.
Yeah.
I mean, but it's very gratuitous violence.
Right.
Involving zombies, giant robots, killer squids. I mean, just outlandish monsters as well. But the art is, if you love it, if you like it, you're going to love it. If you don't, you know. But I always thought the art was stellar that Eric Powell would do. And, you know, he was the artist. He's the writer. It's one of those deals. And, but this book, while at times it seems like gratuitous violence and just monster after monster, all the while there's this very deep story that's coming out of it. And it hits a peak at around Chinatown, which is the 6th trade, which is in my top 5 trades at all time on my list. I mean, that's just me. It's very 1950s, mm-hmm. You know, and I love that era. Especially, I mean, you don't really get 1950s and zombies and monsters and bullets and guns and crazy cars and robots. I guess they would say 1950 robot. But yeah, it's great. Bottom line.
Yep.
Check it out.
You should definitely check it out. All right. Well, I'm sure you out there might have a lot more horror comics. Maybe you would like to suggest them. You can go to stashmycomics.com where we house our podcast and comment on this show. And we'll banter back with you, maybe list some of your favorite horror titles, and we'll read them.
And thank you very much for listening. I very appreciate it. We enjoy making this, and we're enjoying that some of you folks out there are enjoying listening. So
yeah. So yeah, as I said, stashmycomics.com, one of our sponsors. They also have another podcast, which I help produce. That's the main stashmycomics.com show, up to 25 episodes now. So we are a website with 2 podcasts, 2 good podcasts, I would hope to think.
Yes.
And our other sponsor, bndcomics.com, that's our local comic book shop. Check them out.
Comics at the Cabin.
Comics at the Cabin.
Love it.
It's time to make another trip.
That's it.
It's been a while since I've been. All right. Well, we'll wrap up this show, and next week we'll do the grab bag. And then we'll do a special feature, which we have no idea what will be right now. So it's all about surprises.
Put a bunch of stuff in the hat for that one, too.
Yes, exactly. All right. Y'all be good out there. Read some comics. We'll talk to you later. Bye-bye.